All right, good morning. I'll call for the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, April 25th, 2017, and ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you and good morning. Before we get to public comment number one, board, with your, unless you have objection, I'd like to move additional items number one to just above consideration of minutes. So they would go immediately after Heartland Senior Services, and that is the Story City discussion. Mayor Jensen's with us today, and he's got some trees he needs to go plant. So I want to move him up right there without objection.
With that.
All right.
No objection.
So public comment number one is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda. Anybody wishing to do so, come right up to the microphone. And seeing no one moving immediately the microphone, we'll move on to an item I'm not overly happy about. I appreciate the recognition of Lieutenant Dodds, and Lieutenant Dodds has earned the recognition, but this means his departure from us is imminent, and so I'm not all that thrilled about that. Sheriff, I'd like to have you come up, and let's talk about Jeff for just a minute. So Jeff got 30 years with us. So for some reason you kept him around for 30 years.
Well, I kept shuffling him around. Didn't know what to do with him at first, but he was promoted to sergeant and then to lieutenant. And Jeff has been one of these kind of quiet leaders. He doesn't boast about himself, and he doesn't raise a lot of cane. But when something gets done, it's always done, and it's done well. And when there's something going on in the office, others, especially those in his division, always look to him for the leadership he provided. We're very honored to have had Jeff as many years as I have, my 25 years here in the sheriff's office, and he's done just an outstanding job, and he sorely will be missed. But wherever you have a loss, you always also have new opportunities and green pastures. So under his tutelage and leadership, we have a good crop of those to look that can step up to replace him.
Thanks, Sheriff. Yeah, I mean, we talk a lot about how fortunate we are here in Story County to have the staff we have. And it's true. But I believe that Jeff is really representative of all the things that have been good about Story County. And Jeff, in my 7 years here, I've really enjoyed working with you and sure appreciate the time, energy, and effort that you've given to Story County. So, in appreciation of 30 years of leadership, dedication, and service to the citizens of Story County, we recognize Jeffrey J. Dodds, 1987 to 2017 Deputy Sheriff. Thank you, sir. If you have anything you want to say, now's your opportunity. Otherwise, we're going to take a picture. Thanks, Max.
Congratulations.
Thank you,
sir.
Got any idea what's next, kid?
No.
I'm just staying alive.
Yeah.
All right. Smiles for coming.
Here, Jeff, here's the bubble wrap for that.
All right, next item is discussion of one additional detention officer in the jail. Sheriff, Connie, you and I talked about this, it's been a couple months ago and then a week ago, and what it really does is it goes back to a conversation we've had, more than a year ago, 18 months ago or so, talking about adding positions to jail, which we did do, but part of the board adding positions to jail was a complete analysis by your office to see where we were, how it impacts overtime, how it impacts work burnout. And so now, as I understand it, we're talking today just to give this board a great foundation as this conversation goes forward.
Did you say mute?
I forgot to tell him to
can't
silence.
Can't be anything important.
My apologies.
No problem.
So,
Take it away.
Well, actually, a little bit of a build-up to what we did 18 months ago was a few months before that, we came with a concern for the same issue in dispatch. And the board granted an additional dispatch person, and our dispatch was close to burnout, and overtime was just through the roof. When we got the additional staff in dispatch, overtime virtually, unbelievably, almost went away. Of course, you have the time when someone calls in sick or something like that that you have to call somebody in. But where we would have to, on a monthly basis, plug people in for overtime, it was just an ongoing, tremendous expense. We were granted a dispatcher, and after the person was hired and trained, we were able to come back a few months after that and show the board what a tremendous savings it was, and the burnout to folks was really noticeably turned around. So anyway, we also came to the board about 18 months ago, and we had a proposal to the board and asked for three additional detention officers for the Story County Jail, which is obviously my largest division. Anyway, through working with the board, we were given two with a request to come back and report to the board what we've seen with that. Now, we have pretty much a similar result that we had with the two people. And we have, overtime has gone down tremendously. Staff are not required to stay after or come in early or to do those kind of things. Their days off are not canceled, and people are actually given vacation that they've earned. So anyway, with those things, we also still see that being the largest division, that means we have more FMLA. We have military leaves and other kinds of leaves that are going on, and we notice that we still are not quite where we would like to be. And it is our belief that the third person that is also by the staffing plan that was designed that we presented to the Board of Supervisors would complement our division and give us the necessary amount of staff to run the jail. That does not mean that there won't be some times of overtime, as we came over last week and wanted to fill you in and the board that we are going to be down a number of people in the jail here. We had one person that left. We had another person for personnel reasons left. We have FMLA, two people that are going to be out. One just came back from FMLA, thank goodness. And so we're kind of going to be down about five people we're looking at of detention officers that we're going to be using some overtime on. Now, public safety is a little bit different animal. That when you hire someone, you just don't show them around the place for a day or two and they're working. They come in, they receive orientation for a detention officer. They go to a two-week jail school in Des Moines, and then once that is completed, they come back and they're off to a three-month field training officer program that they work in the jail. And that's after the recruitment and hiring process goes on. So anyway, with that, from the day that we hire the person and they start, they're really not effective to us till about, 3.5-4 months. And then they start soloing, going on their own, and filling, actually, the position that's been vacated. So as we have those discussions, like I said, this is the time that we wanted to come back. This summer is going to be a little bit of a challenge for us. Our patrol division, we're going to be down 5 to 6 people there. We have dispatch. I just found out today that we have one person you gave us is going to be on military leave for a 3-month exercise program. And we just got word today that that's starting in July. Starting in May. So May, June, and July, he will be gone from us. So with those things in mind and the number that we anticipate being down in the jail, We wanted the board to be fully aware of what the sheriff's office is going to be facing this summer. It's going to be a little bit tough. You know that we have a person that we have assigned to Interpol Washington, and I'm going to be, my intent is to bring that person back during these times this summer and not fill that position, because we, I think we need the staff here that much. So once we get fully staffed, we will reconsider Interpol again. But right now, I think our first duty is here at home. Connie, did I leave anything out?
I don't believe so.
So today's conversation, so that we're all on the same page, is not a request to fill this position. It's an update of how we got where we got and the expectation that there will be a request forthcoming.
As promised, we said that we would get back to the board and visit with the board about the progress that we made and the results that we've seen since we were given the other two positions.
Absolutely. But this is intended as the beginning of the conversation to get this board on the same page so that we can move through the consideration process over the next little bit.
Yes, and I emailed each of you the PowerPoint that was given, because we have two new board members, so I wanted you two to know what the presentation was, and then I also gave all three of you the update on what the overtime has been, and you can see how drastically it has dropped. One thing I do want to say about the overtime is that is specifically the overtime for just the jail division. It's not for the whole sheriff's office. So even though the ending numbers may seem higher, this is just the jail division itself.
Absolutely. And the other point that resonates with me is right now we have supervisors working in the jail that aren't truly working as supervisors because they can't. They have to work as detention officers rather than supervising detention officers in order to fill the hours that we have to have.
Use the body to plug a hole wherever that hole is needed.
Absolutely.
And that's where part of the stress and that's where part of the burnout comes.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's doing things, and it it takes away from the professional operation of the jail if you can't have the appropriate supervision and management of that organization.
All right. So, board, this was intended just to give you guys the sense of how we got where we got and hopefully set the table for us to have the conversation going forward, questions about where we are.
The first one has to do with our agenda today, because we have in the consent agenda approval of two new hires. Are those detention officers?
No.
Whose names are they?
Cooks.
Those are the cooks.
Yep. Thank you. Okay. I don't think it just said. Okay. So I do remember the presentation. Okay. That was here 18 months ago. I read some of it, to be honest. Sorry. Not all of it. So timing. Where are you looking at, actually, if we added a third detention officer? Where would that fit in? Because, I mean, we've already done the budget for fiscal year, 17, 18. So where would you look at that fitting in?
Well, if I had my preferences, I'd say a year and a half ago. But the need is certainly there, but the purse strings are controlled by the board. And so that's why it's important that we have the discussion with the board. We would take this person at our soonest opportunity. That is also the soonest convenience for the board, providing funding can be found for an additional person.
Yeah, and then, Laura, to answer the question, what we did with the two positions that we added, because it was outside of the budgeting process, we just found the dollars to get. We recognized that there was a need. Ask was for three. The board approved two, and we just found the dollars in that fiscal year. And then as we budgeted going forward, of course, those were approved positions that we budgeted for.
Right. Okay.
Here's that. Here's that right there. Marty, any questions?
Two things.
Yep.
Moving on the unincorporated areas, yeah, my ears perk up when I hear you're down 5 to 6 patrol officers on your road units. I mean, that's a big hole. You don't have that many.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we have 18 assigned to the patrol division, uniform patrol division. Three of the 18 are supervisors. We have 15 deputies that are broken down in shifts.
So there's no... I know you're going to say no, but I'm just saying there's not... I'm sure you're bearing the hardships on a staffing basis to see that, you know, everything is taken care of as per your contracts and just, you know, how you comport your department. So
yes. Supervisors have already looked at the schedules ahead of time. Mm-hmm. They've notified people about vacation and switching days and switching shifts. So we're working that so we have as appropriate amount of coverage as we can. First and foremost, is, of course, the safety of the public, but right there with that is the safety of my personnel that's out there. So we want to make sure that there's enough out there to back each other up, to be safe. And about 8 years ago, this happened where we were down 7 people at one time. And for about a 3-month period, the reserves stepped in and really carried us through that time. However, as things grow and move on, our reserve is in the process of changing, and our reserve requires the same amount of training, almost identical, as a full-time deputy does. And since they have other jobs and that they attend to, and their training is sporadic as it goes through the months, it takes much longer for one to be fully prepared to be roadworthy to go out and fill in a patrol position. So right now, we're down to one reserve that is capable to go out and solo patrol. The other reserves are able to get in with a deputy, you know, for extra backup or if we need that. We have, like I said, our staffing is looked at by our staff, by our sheriff's command supervisors, and by the division commander, and we shuffle people as needed to move them around, so we do have appropriate staffing for each shift of each day.
Okay. Oh, good. That's how I would expect to hear that story. In my household, we start with a pot of coffee and WHL. This morning, Ben and Bonnie are down in Dallas County because a week from today, they're going to have a bond issue, and then we're talking to the supervisors in the sheriff's department. On a going forward basis, even with a successful passage of the fourth attempt to pass this bond issue, and we're talking in the out years here, I would suspect that they probably would be 2 years away from occupying, if not three. How do you see, I mean, just tell me what that looks like. Yeah, so a week from today, Dallas County does something they have yet to do. I mean, can you tell me what that looks like for your department here going forward?
Well, what we have been doing is we've been housing some of their overflow that they have had. And we've been up as high as 21 inmates from Dallas County that we've been holding. Fortunately, our population in our jail has been down. We go through peaks and valleys, and we've been in a valley here. Today, we have 7 inmates from Dallas County. We have approximately 67 full-time count in the jail right now. So Story County, we are at 60. Of those 60, we have 14 female inmates, which we have a capacity of 10, so it's a little bit tight there. And we will continue right now. I guess, quite frankly, this is an opportunity. The more they can send us, the more we can hold, and that certainly helps our revenue. Story County went through exactly what Dallas County is going through now, and we were to the point we were farming inmates out until we got our Justice Center built. And we have had revenue. We've talked to ICE. Immigration has come up and talked to us. They tell us they are anticipating these more holds and more arrests that they will have, and a person that's lawfully arrested or has the appropriate affidavit signed by a federal officer, we've always cooperated with our federal partners, and we will continue to do so. So if that develops, we would get hold of the ICE inmates that they would bring us. ICE pays a little better, so. But
well, there was a time in the early days of the Justice Center where you were holding a lot of ICE inmates, as I recall.
At that time, we were holding U.S. Marshals, and that's who the contract we have is U.S. Marshals. And my first year that we're in the Justice Center, where we had a full year where we were holding U.S. Marshals, where they had a lot of inmates, we made $650,000 that we brought into Story County. But then with Polk County opening their jail and one wing we got that agreement with the marshals. They hold them down there, so our marshal pool has dried up. But as things continue to move on and with the new administration and more enforcement of some of the laws that may have been not as strictly enforced, is part of the reason why the numbers of arrests have gone down. So we'll see what the next few months of the next year brings to see if we start having more requests from our federal partners to hold more inmates, and we'll certainly cooperate as best as we can.
Super. Well, Sheriff, I know you've got training going on out in the field, so we'll get you out of here. The question is, what kind of time frame are you looking at for this to come back to the board?
Well, we're ready to prepare to bring this back as soon as we can conveniently get it on the agenda and move forward. And like I said, we could a year and a half ago, so we will certainly bring that over to the board and to the auditor to get it on the agenda, and we'll move forward. And
yeah, Connie, let's get it on the I think it's May 23rd, so I think we're kind of packed up between now and the 23rd.
The 15th is a limited agenda,
right.
I think.
Right. So let's get it on May 23rd, and we'll have the consideration at that point.
Great.
Okay.
I'd just like to know that I also had in the back of my mind about that. So good question, Marty, about the Dallas situation. I'm not comfortable having us just moving forward, having a budget based upon immigration detentions, but that's just a comment on my part. Just to let you know that one thing to budget and anticipate that with Dallas, we might go down, but just to let the sheriff know going forward, looking at that hard and long about.
Yeah, we budget based on number of prisoners that we think we're going to hold for other entities.
Right.
And the reality is, the sheriff, as you stated, has always held anybody who had the appropriate warrants to be held, and refused to hold anybody that didn't have the appropriate warrants. We're going to continue that.
But we have an option on that, right? I mean, going forward, I mean, we don't have an option. They just say you will hold our prisoners.
Well, this is where it's starting to get a little bit more colorful, if you might say. I just talked with Ethan from the county attorney's office, and he attended, maybe Ethan could even talk on this better than I could. But anyway, if the state of Iowa passes a law that says the sheriff shall honor immigration, then that's literally a catch-22. Because we always viewed holding someone in our jail without a warrant or a signed affidavit, like any other officer that brings them in, is a violation of that person's constitutional rights, whether they're a U.S. citizen or not. That's just the way the Constitution is.
Mm-hmm.
So now, with the ICE detainers, which is a request to hold someone with no charge and no affidavit for 48 hours, mm-hmm. and the state of Iowa says, we shall honor them, well, it comes down to me, which law am I going to break? And so this is something that, it's set up where you can't win. So we're going to be working with our county attorney's office and having this discussion. And, we want to do the right thing. We will do the constitutional thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to make sure that we...
And I just want to underscore, we'll do the constitutional thing as we have always done. No different than we've always
done. Exactly
and
right.
And perhaps I misunderstood, because the U.S. Marshals was an actual contract. We contracted with the Marshals to hold people who were possibly, arrested out of Story County, and they were brought in and held until they could go to court appearances down in Polk County, right?
Well, yes.
And that's what I thought you were talking about with an ICE contract.
Yes and no, Loris. The thing is, as the sheriff and the keeper of the jail, we will detain any lawfully arrested and papered individual. And it makes no difference if we have a contract with them or not.
Right.
The issue with the contract with the marshals were the marshals have certain standards that in order for a local facility like a county jail to hold their inmates, they got to comply and meet their standards. So they come in and do an inspection, and once they do that inspection, then we sign an agreement basically saying we met their standards, and that's how we operate our jail. So then we do that. ICE is a little bit more... detailed because they have bilingual issues and things like this. So they're reviewing the marshal contract that they've asked for and we sent them. And once they get that done, then they'll come back and negotiate if they should decide to have a contract with us. But we do not need a contract to hold a lawfully papered prisoner.
Okay. Just to clarify here, there's somebody in Story County. Mm-hmm. But if they're bringing someone from another county, that is in a different situation, correct? Do we have the option to say, no, we won't hold someone from a different county?
Yeah, I could say that we wouldn't hold them. And what we do with the other counties that we have a routine of holding their prisoners, we do a 28 agreement. I believe, and so it's just an understanding between the two counties, basically between the two sheriffs, how that we're going to hold their prisons, just agreeing to do that. But if we get a call from the other county that has, hey, we have an inmate that has special needs, you can meet, will you hold them? Sure, bring them down. I mean, as long as they have the warrant or they have the court order that's putting them in jail. So.
But let's just be clear, because there's two moving parts here. The sheriff has the authority to determine who goes into jail and who doesn't go into jail. The Board of Supervisors has the authority to enter into or not enter into a contract on behalf of the county. So you got two separate moving issues here, and this is way off the topic that we were supposed to be on. So we're going to be done. Sheriff, enjoy training. Thank you very much. We'll look forward to on the 23rd.
Thank you.
Next is the Economic Development Commission. Thanks, Jeff. Economic Development Commission quarterly report. Brendan Dreyer, so Ames Economic Development Commission holds the contract, we just talked about contracts, with Story County to provide economic development services to our rural areas and our smaller towns, as well as workforce development opportunities within the county. And this is Brenda's first opportunity to do a quarterly report with us, so welcome.
Good morning, Brenda.
Well, it's great to be here, and I'll tell you, I want to thank the three of you who have spent quite a bit of time between the three of you over the last month or so helping me try to get myself in order and gain an understanding of what's going on around the county. And your passion for economic development, the citizens and the communities of this county is very, very evident. And I'm very excited to assist the staff here at the county and the three of you in our efforts to enhance economic development and community development across the county. So because I'm still trying to get my bearings on that particular aspect of our contract, and I'm trying to be a good listener and take good notes and really get a grasp of what's going on in the communities, when I'm back in another quarter, I'll be talking about that. But today, I think it's important that we visit about where we're at with workforce. And you have made a very generous contribution to support the efforts of workforce attraction across the county. And we are very committed to ensure that our workforce efforts indeed serve the broader business community beyond Ames. Okay, let me get myself in order here. So, when we talk about workforce solutions, what we're looking at is K-12 engagement, an internship program, a robust internship program, Homebase Iowa, something called Concierge Assistance Program, and, of course, our job posting board. I'm going to start first with K-12 engagement. So, Story County, everybody is aware, is one of the lowest unemployment rates, not only in Iowa, but across the country. And it's not easy just to wave a wand and attract a workforce to our wonderful opportunities we have. We need to be very systematic in our approach to ensure that we're building the workforce of tomorrow. And so I'm going to talk today about the SCALE program, but I think it's important in our travels. We've heard about exciting school-to-work programs. We've heard about things already going on with business and industry partnerships in the high schools. I had an opportunity to talk to Boys and Girls Club yesterday about a program they want to do with 7th and 8th graders. So this is not the only program. I think there's a lot of great things going on, and the more of those types of things that happen and our students at all ages getting exposed to our business community, I think is a great thing. But the SCALE program is unique because it cuts across 8 different school districts. And so every school district in the county, as well as Boone, are involved in this initiative. And so I think that's the traction and one of the things we're really excited about. But it is a partnership with DMAC, the school districts, and our business community. And it's modeled after really two initiatives in Iowa that you may hear about. That's APEX and Waukee.
in a program that I'm very proud about, which is the Iowa Big North program, which includes Charles City, New Hampton, Osage, and a small district, Red Marble Rock. But they're great things, and they learn from the best of both of those programs in forming the SCALE program here in Story County. It involves every junior and senior. They have the opportunity to participate in the program, and they get a chance to earn college credit. And I think what I want to stress is that there is no GPA requirement. So it's a program that's available to everybody. A few weeks ago, I had a chance to actually attend the meeting where the juniors and seniors that had indicated an initial interest in the program came together to hear from students at APEX about the program. We're in the midst of the registration process with the juniors and seniors in the county and Boone. And by Friday, I just coordinated a meeting with DMAC and the consortium contact. So by Friday, we're going to have a pretty good understanding of what our first group looks like. The college credits will come in one of four tracks. It'll be business communication and technology, an engineering STEM sort of area, renewable energy and biosciences, and health and human services. So for example, if a student's interested in biosciences, they may be working on a project with REG or one of the DuPont or Lincoln Way Energy. And they're involved in, you know, obviously Health and Human Services, Mary Greeley, McFarland, Story County Medical. So once we identify what the students are interested in, then it'll fall on the business community. And in my role as Director of Workforce Solutions, I will work very hard to identify companies to make sure that we have business partnerships that align with the school's registration. So we're very excited. We're at a really key part and a key place in this SCALE initiative. And so we'll be hearing more about that over the summer and certainly by fall when we roll kids into that program. In terms of the summer internship program, we have so many employers across the county that have interns. And if we could just grasp even a small percentage of those students that aren't tired of Iowa State or DMAC and get them to stay to work for our employers, that could be some really strong recruiting. So we will have five events that we're coordinating that start the end of May and run through the end of July. And again, you don't have to be a firm with 50 interns. You can be somebody, a small office with one intern. And we want to connect with those interns, and we want to give them an opportunity to mingle with each other, to mingle with our business community, to hear why it is such a great place to work. And so this year we're going to be hosting an event with the Des Moines internship group. So this year we'll be bringing our group down to Des Moines. But what I would remind everybody is that next year we'll bring those Des Moines interns to East, so, or to Story County. So I do think it just broadens the scope of what we're trying to do with the program. We're going to be talking with them about civic engagement, personal finance, business etiquette. So we'll have evening events. We'll try to keep them to an hour, hour and a half. In the past, it's ranged from 85 to 135 interns. We do know one of our largest employers will be making it mandatory this year for their interns, so we do expect that number to grow. Again, our goal is to create awareness and opportunities and retain some of that talent as they go to graduate.
Well, so, and it's a program that has really taken off over the last couple of years, and really exciting to anecdotally see some of the results from that. So thanks for digging in. I know it's late in the year when you took this on, but thanks for digging in to keep it going.
It's probably the one thing right now that's really keeping me awake, because the deadline there is coming on quickly. So I think you're pretty aware of Home Base Iowa. And I think we're not alone in terms of trying to make those connections. So we have begun work to start meeting with our industries by sector. And we've pulled together advanced manufacturing employers from across the county We had our first meeting earlier this month, and one of the things we heard from them is, how do we do more with the Homebase Iowa? Mm-hmm. How do we understand what they have for military certification? So I'm real excited via a conversation actually Dan had with Heidi, a staffing person in an elevator at some conference. We're actually going to bring their corporate military recruiter mm-hmm. up to meet with our advanced manufacturing folks, because I think they need to understand from somebody that is doing a lot how to be successful at that. So we're going to be doing that in June, and maybe we can launch some of the incentives you have in place. To
Yeah, and this is one
program.
Of the initiatives. So we just talked about the internship program, which took off. This is one of our initiatives that has not yet taken yeah. off that we're really interested in seeing it.
So we got to figure out who's doing it, who's doing it successfully, and how do we model that. So I think we really need to start with our advanced manufacturers that need those maintenance technicians, the folks that I think have a good transfer of skills. So this is something that's out there that we want to do more with, and as we move through the next couple quarters, I think you'll see us launch this officially. But we know that once we get somebody interested in a job, they may have a trailing spouse, a child. How important it is that they understand what we have. And so I would stress that, you know, it might be that it makes sense. We want to show them neighboring communities, neighboring school districts. Our offices will be involved in supporting folks that are sponsoring our workforce efforts with some of this really special assistance to try to cement the deal. In terms of bringing people to Story County to work. So newcomer classes, networking events, trailing spouse assistance, community tours, and really well, this is about as far as it's gotten, so it'll be something you'll be hearing about more in the future. And finally, I want to talk about our job posting board. And while it's called Work in Ames, I guess what I want to tell you is when I was working as the economic developer between Spencer and Okoboji, we had a lot of conversation about why we focused in on just the Okoboji. You know, you'd think you might as well use the thing that gives you maybe the most awareness as a marketing piece. And so while it's called Work in Ames, there's been a lot of efforts pushed towards that. What I would tell you is that it is a Story County initiative. And so as we go in and look at this, let's see if I've got this right. You'll see here is the new website. Let's see if we how we maneuver around in this. It's unique. It's very simplified. A job seeker or an employer can go in and do a real quick search. So if they're looking for a position in maintenance, you know, it'll pull up, you know, all of the things in that. Oops, that can't be right. Let's just try manufacturing.
Brenda, maybe yeah. I used this wrong, but I pulled it up a week or so ago to check it out. And I got the impression that maybe I needed to sign in first.
No,
you do not.
I do not.
Or
I no.
totally did not work it correctly.
Yeah, okay. The general search bar. So I guess one of the things that I would show you is, so we wanted to launch this, and we knew it was going to take a little bit of time for all of our employers to get on and get their positions located. So what we decided to do was to pull from Indeed in a 20-mile radius around Ames. So it's not perfect, but by virtue of that pull, then we do get jobs that are out there today so that people can do a search and see, yes, we have got job opportunities. So you can see right here in just my manufacturing search that the Almaco opportunity there popped up. You saw Boone is involved a little bit with us. There's another Nevada opportunity. When I looked at the statistics yesterday, we have 1,500 job openings that are pulling from Indeed and we are continuing to grow our efforts with our existing employers. The other thing we can do here is, I mentioned REG earlier, so I will pull them. But then you can also do an employer search. So there you can, because it has anything with probably that capital E showing up somewhere in there, but you can see where the REG jobs are showing up. On the website as well, we have highlighted the sponsors of our workforce efforts. And so we're up to about 10 or 12 of those, but we're aggregating and turning those over to the website people all at once. So we are having an HR meeting next Tuesday where we'll be rolling out the specifics of what I just told you with more detail. But all by then, all of our sponsors will be identified. But you can see you guys were early sponsors in these efforts.
I'd like to talk about the word sponsor versus a government contract.
Okay.
I know it. Some people may feel this is down in the minutia, but we contract with services.
Yep.
We don't sponsor you. And I don't know that those other people up there like Converse Conditioned Air and Global Reach or Global Bentley actually have a contract for you to provide services. So I just like us all to look at what's the difference between a sponsorship and a government entity contract.
Sure, but it doesn't say sponsorship right there.
It does sponsor.
Go up. Future employers.
Oh, employers. Thank you. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Maybe somebody raised your mind about that. But I think what's important is I had a good conversation with the Story City development folks. And I just said, you know, it's important to understand that the supervisors feel really strongly about this and are supporting our workforce efforts. So a couple other things you can find on the website is there's a guide for employers to establish interns. There's a lot of little things you need to be considered. Again, trying to be helpful with those efforts. There's a relocation guide. And then just some other things I'd like you to take a look at sometime, our awards and accolades, is there are three videos that we just had done that really are designed to send a strong message to folks that are looking to move somewhere that we've got a lot going on. And so when you have a chance and you look at the Work in AIM site, please watch the videos. We're very pleased how they turned out. We're going to be doing some smaller videos and using those in our social media efforts. But anyway, we're excited. We're pleased that you're with us on this journey. It's important. We want our industries to continue to grow and expand here. We want to attract people and keep our families. And so this is an important partnership we have together. So any questions for me?
So I would just say, so you've been on the job now for a month?
3 weeks.
And we have heard so many good things about you. Clearly, we've experienced the good things firsthand. But we're so glad you're here. We're so happy with how you hit the ground running, bring such great experiences, but also energy and enthusiasm, and understand truly what we're trying to do. And so we're excited. We're every bit as excited to work with you as you are with us. And while we're going to miss Drew as he transitions to other things, we're sure excited to have you stepping in as our primary liaison to this contract.
Well, we got a lot of things to get done, and it's going to require all of us and the partnership we have with the county and the staff here. So,
okay. Any questions before we let Brenda go?
Nope. I appreciate having her. I had time to spend over the last week.
They're not germane for public, so I'll go ahead and ask them later.
I mean, oh, perfect. Yep.
About the
good
website itself.
Always,
okay.
Always.
Yes. So, outstanding. So next item, we've got Heartland Senior Services Agency Report. Our dear friend Nancy Carroll.
Good morning, Nancy.
Hi, Nancy. Hello.
Well, thank you for having me this morning. And on behalf of our board of directors, I will just go over the report that I sent to you, I believe, last week, and answer any questions or any insights you all have related to Heartland Senior Services. Generally, our budget's about $1 million. As you can see, our funders provide almost half that, and Story County in particular, $90,000. So thank you. It's huge, and we really appreciate the support countywide. We also don't think it's important to draw your attention that we do have participant fees. You know, so we are generating almost $400,000 that way. And we have a goal to raise a couple hundred thousand every year through private fundraising efforts. The good news, in 15-16, we did end in the good, only 32,000, so it's a fine line. But we have, as you'll hopefully hear as I report out on what is going on currently, that we're trying to make some significant inroads strategically to get that to be a little bit better net gain this current year as well as next year. So with activities, last year I believe I spoke to, and this year it just continued to evolve, that baby boomers, the population we're responsible to serve, those 60 and above, as well as those that are in their current 90s, so we're not excluding anyone, but we're just knowing the future is going to look different than it does currently for expectations of the baby boomer generation. So with that being said, we entered into conversations last February of 16 with the major players that you see at the bottom of this page that include the likes of Story County. Thank you. Deb has been coming actively to every meeting. Iowa State University, we had the Dean of the College of Human Sciences and the new Warren Madden replacement, Kate Gregory, President and CEO of Mary Greeley Medical Center, and his Vice President of Finances, but Brian Dieter and Gary Botine. And I won't go over everyone. Steve Shanker and Keith Abraham from the City of Ames. So, I mean, it is a wide
absolutely
spectrum.
Laura, if you indicate you want to talk about this.
Yeah, I really would like to point out again that Deb, in representing the county, is a staff person, and we appreciate her representing the county, but we have not made any decision about participation. And so it always makes me uncomfortable when this list comes out or when it's identified in the media as the partners, because we have not made any decision about any role we would take. We appreciate being invited, and I'm sure Deb is doing a wonderful job of keeping everyone reminded about that. So
yeah, but it's no different than Steve Shanker is staff for the City of Ames. Keith
right.
Abrams is staff for the City of Ames. Nancy Carroll is staff for Heartland Senior Services. Brian Dieter is staff for Mary Greeley. Mm-hmm. Kate Gregory is staff for Iowa State. And so we're just following the exact same pathway that all these others are doing in having the conversation. And I think it's important to underscore, while you guys are making great progress, there's still a lot of work left to do. And everybody's going to have to be – nobody that I just mentioned – has the authority on their own to commit their organization to anything.
Correct.
So
well
correct.
Said. And Loris and Marty, both of you had not been, I believe, elected yet. When we had the joint meeting of all the governing bodies back November 1, mm-hmm. and we were very clear at that meeting that included 45 members of the mayor and council, and Rick and I know Wayne were there, just stating very directly, because to Rick's point right here today, no one has made any formal commitment to being a partner. You did, though, coming off that November 1, everyone then expressed, because that was part of that November 1's agenda, to say, now that you understand the concept, no one's making any decisions, and there won't be any decisions until the City of Ames would trigger a feasibility study, so we all know the facts. But do you want your staff person to continue monthly to come and be a part of the conversation? And people did respond, yes, they did. So I just want to be very clear.
But that's not even an informal commitment, though. Right, that's, having them go forward to learn more information is
a desire of Story County to be part of the conversation while we figure out if it is feasible, and if it is feasible, what, if any, role Story County would have. Just like what, if any, role Mary Greeley would have, everybody else.
Everyone's the same.
So I'm hearing rumblings that the Ames schools, are starting to dip their, I guess this is an unintentional pun, but starting to dip their toes back in the water?
Yeah, there was a lengthy discussion at the school board meeting last night. They now, I believe, had a formal vote, 5-2, that said they did want to reengage again. So we look forward to what will continue to unfold with that conversation, because it's a challenging one, because there are different needs and expectations, but we hope together we can continue to forge a great collaboration. So anything else with the Healthy Life Center?
No, but thank you.
But point understood, and I believe being addressed, so thank you. The Adult Day Center continues to be such a cornerstone piece for Heartland. just as a big picture, we have it's a locked medical unit. We're licensed through the state of Iowa for approximately up to 30 people a day. We average around 20, and 75% of those folks have some form of dementia. So it is a very critical service, and I appreciate following the workforce development conversation, because we need to understand that dementia is going to continue to be an epidemic almost as we move forward in the years to come because of the baby boomer bulge of numbers. And a lot of people are gainfully employed in the Story County area that drop a loved one off at the adult day so they continue to be gainfully employed. So we're doing two things, caregivers and the actual participant. Nutrition had the most changes this last year. I know a year ago I would have been here saying that we needed to try to become more efficient. And through the conversations that did unfold very successfully between Mary Greeley and Heartland, this past January 17, we did begin a formal partnership with Meals on Wheels of Story County. Mary Greeley now prepares approximately 150 home-delivered meals. Heartland then coordinates the volunteers to get those meals successfully delivered. Mary Greeley also prepares bulk food for our existing still congregate site names as well as our ABC site at the same location. We did close the off sites within the county, and as you can see, I just wanted to reiterate what I would have shared last year. The numbers warranted those to be closed. So again, it's going to save us significant funds, and again, I think it's just a good demonstration that together we can be efficient and effective, and that kicks me into the exciting thing with us now taking over the delivery of the meals for the approximately 45 that Mary Greeley was doing in Ames, or we're doing in Ames, is our outreach program. Mm-hmm. We now go in, and we did this prior to having the 45 join us in January. Our outreach staff went and met with each of those 45 people individually and did an assessment on their life situation, because usually to receive a home or to receive a home delivered meal, you have to be homebound. So there are all sorts of other ramifications in your life that outreach can come in and support people in. And outreach's mission is to connect individuals with existing available resources and just to make them aware and to make that connection happen. So it's been tremendous to get into another 45 people's lives that we can help, and that's happening. So that, I think, is a great byproduct of the meals program. So those are really my comments. Any other questions or concerns or insights you have, I would love to...
So the first thing I would say is congratulations on forming that great partnership with Mary Greeley. Well, I'm really disappointed that it was necessary to close a couple of our aggregate meal sites out in the county. The numbers speak for themselves. But the reality is, for many of the people that get home delivered meals, that's the only person they see all day.
That's right.
And it makes perfect sense for Heartland to take on that role. And it makes perfect sense for Mary Greeley, who's already making the food anyway, to take on that role. That's exactly the way partnerships are supposed to work. And just really appreciate your foresight in working with Mary Greeley to put this together. I think this benefits, not only on a bottom line point of view, this benefits the people of Story County to a great extent. So thank you.
Good, thank you.
Other questions for Nancy?
I find myself aging into your demographic. It's nice to know
that this is somewhere to go.
We're there for you, Marty.
I'll make Nancy. It's one of those things that I guess I have comfort for the fact that we're drawn into the conversation, how we participate. I guess we have that discussion. But the thing is, this is clearly something I would think Story County government should be at the table listening to, if not participating and giving our take on what we see. And I look forward to seeing where it goes.
Thank you. Thank you all for all your work. I know over the years since I've covered Heartland, and I've seen the challenges over and over again that the staff have risen above to serve. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the comments.
Yep. Thanks, Nancy.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
All right, so now we're pulling the first item on additional items up to have this conversation. We've got Mayor Mike Jensen from Story City with us, along with Leanne Harder. Leanne, are you coming up for this? You're on the agenda. And we're talking about the North Park project that has been previously approved by the Board of Supervisors and some of the changes that are going on.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
No, you're fine.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be here and hopefully answer any of the questions you have on this project. I took the liberty to send you a letter outlining what I thought those were, and hopefully they've answered some of that just to speed up the process for you. We feel the project is very worthwhile. We have an antique carousel that's within this park that draws 15,000 to 20,000 people a year, and not just from the United States, but all over the world. And we want to make this park as good as we can. It'll draw more people to Story City as well as Story County. And we've used these grants before. We've never abused them. And I don't really think we're abusing this one. I don't think we need to go back and redo that. But this is up to you guys, and that's what I'm here today to try to get a yes vote out of you.
Outstanding. Thanks, Mike. Loris, you're the one who had questions and asked for us to revisit this.
I did.
So I'll let you get going.
Sure. I drove up. My husband and I went up and visited your park. Okay.
Great.
Yes. To physically see what we were looking at. Went to South Park 2 to ascertain, because it was unclear even what the new picnic shelter would look like. The area we're talking about, North Park, already has two shelters. And so I loved the little bandstand on there. And I can see definitely where it requires new footing, considering you're going to put much more weight on it. Okay.
That was the main issue there, or we would still be doing that. But
right.
By going away from that and adding the weight and not have the problems down the road and building a shelter that's the same capacity, we save $3,500 too. So that's a plus to the project.
So where I still am unclear is the use of the band, you call it the band stand, I call it the band shell, sorry, different parts of this island are up, I guess. Okay. Is that because the way I even read your letter, into an additional open shelter picnic area that you were going to repurpose it into a picnic area. But the tables were not going to be permanently attached, correct?
They'd just be fixed.
Right, so the band shell could be used for other uses,
exactly.
Correct?
And it gets used like when we have celebrations in the park, basically, like Scandinavian days and music in the park and things like
right.
that.
Right.
And we'll still leave that there. We're going to do a little tuck pointing on it and that, but there's a need for that shelter. All the shelters we have, including the Fairview Lodge, which is an all-weather shelter, which is rented sometimes twice a day. And the more amenities we put in the park, the more people seem to come, and that's good. That's what we want them to do.
Are you looking at, from the design here, where you're putting now the shelter, you're looking then at a covered one with electricity, but not going like the south one, where there's all that brick and everything?
What it'll be, it's going to be a building shaped like the carousel building. More like inside,
okay.
And it'll have the stone columns that go up, just like the South Park, trying to tie everything together. The location's slightly different, but we're putting it in an area where we have Little League baseball and softball games there, and it'll be just across the creek away from that. And I think the parking is right there, so people don't have to walk far, and these will all be connected with a paved trail. So.
This is a case where after receiving your letter, after physically going up, taking this map, and literally visiting the site to see what was there, what the possibilities are, wishing I had maybe more background information to start with. Maybe in the future, if these come forward, staff could present us with actually what was originally approved rather than us having to go look for it. I can see a lot of rationale in your reasoning that you're really not altering the intent of the project. That I see after going to look and realizing the band shell is able to be used. Right now, you are using it.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that it still retains that part of the personality. Okay. I now am in agreement that you have not significantly changed the intent. I would like us still to look at our procedures going forward, because I do really want to have us look, have more projects submitted than we have money for, so that we actually are have the most robust program we can have. And in the future, I can see where this project competing against someone who is narrowly outscored. I could see where they would complain and say, wait a minute, you're restoring a somewhat historic versus just expanding your picnic space. This was a hard decision for me. I appreciate you coming. But if I can't say sometimes I'm wrong, or that other research and other information that has come to me has indicated that my concern was still valid, but you've met my concern, right, then I don't think I'd be a very good supervisor. Okay?
I appreciate that.
Yeah, so that's
right.
Where I am.
So, I mean, so you were, as I took it, Marty, I'll open up to you. You were the only one that was against or thought you were going to be against this, mm-hmm. which is why we've got it back on here. This doesn't require any action from us. Last week, unless we want to do something about it, last week we took the step of extending the project deadline from November 30th to May 1st
right.
of 2018. That gives you guys plenty of time to get it done. I've said all along that the Story City City Council is more equipped to decide what's in the best interest of Story City than we are. I started where you ended up, which is this is not a major modification to a project as we see in every project that we do. We never quite end up where we think we're starting, and all we can ask for is that the dollars that we allocate, which in this case are about just under a quarter of the dollars of the entire project, be used to the betterment of the community in the way that the community sees fit. Marty, unless you feel differently, we'll just move on. We don't need to take any action here.
No, I had a conference last week and I had a conference this week. It was an engineering unforeseen. You had sunk expenses prior to your submission. Didn't find it out until you spent the money and engaged in the process, and it's just what it takes to build stuff.
I would like to give staff direction moving forward, or have us consider giving staff direction.
If we use this as our example, I would say this is an unknown that we didn't find until they made a submission, and until they had actually engaged an engineer to give them their professional opinion, did they know this. So I don't see where they could have, the Story City could have been anticipatory in filling out an application that would have met that criteria.
That isn't right where, quite where I was headed, though, Marty. But as I mentioned before, we got a letter, and there was one paragraph that talked about substitution of a project. One letter that talks about the substitution of the van shell for the picnic shelter. So the instruction to staff in the future would be make sure that we bring back up to the time that anything like this is put on the agenda, the original information that under which this project was approved. Request back, since it came, that letter originally came to staff, that there be more clarification about what exactly is being proposed in one paragraph on that. I would say Mayor Jensen's letter was quite informative to me, and I would like to see that it's always better to have more information than less information.
Okay, but so I disagree with directing staff to do that, and here's why. That information is all readily available to the three of us, to every member of the public. It's as simple as going back in, as I did, and looking at the previous agenda that this was discussed, listening to the audio of all that. And I happen to know, so you're asking for Leanne to do that for us. I happen to know what Leanne's work schedule looks like. And when the information is already available to us, why do we need staff to go get it for us when we can go get it ourselves, or anybody else who wants to get it can get it for themselves?
I'd like to point out that at minimum, it should have been identified what audio we could have gone and listened to, or what date that project was approved. Because I'm going to go the other way, I agree there's a lot on staff's plate, and I've talked before about prioritizing that better, and what we present out to the public, and yes, even to us.
us is that staff, I believe, we're going to hear later today a presentation from Planning and Zoning, which I think that the staff did an exceptional job of making sure that me as a newcomer, but certainly any member of the public, could immediately access that information. You're right. We probably do have different expectations about what a staff position and what prepping would be on it. So,
well, yeah, and I just happen to know how hard we already work our staffs, and when the information is readily available to us, and I mean readily available, I don't see why we would want to put more on staff's plate.
I think I'm back to at least in enough direction that people do not have to search, do not have to spend for a great deal of time searching for information.
So I
think you've got that caught up in this a little bit, I feel. Okay?
So, Mike, you're good.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming down.
I appreciate
that.
Good
time, Mike. Okay, so we are now to consideration of minutes from April 18th.
I move approval of the minutes from April
18th. I'll second. Any discussion?
None.
Chi.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Consideration of personnel actions as listed, board.
Move approval.
Move approval. Second, sorry.
Motion and a second. Chi.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda, board.
Approve as presented.
Second.
We got a motion and a second. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda passes. Public hearing today. Discussion. Hey, Loris teed it up for us. Discussion and consideration of Resolution 1790, the Irons Major Subdivision, an extensive presentation by Jerry Moore. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Mr. Moore.
All right, we're here to talk about the Irons. Major subdivision plat, final plat, the Irons case is SUB02-16, resolution 1790. Property owners are Chris Gardner, the Irons LLC. From Huxley, Ames Golf and Country Club, also a property owner, 5752 George Washington Carver. In Ames, engineering firm, Civil Design Advantage out of Grimes. A little bit of background. The preliminary plat was before the Board of Supervisors June 28, 2016. It was also before the City Council June 14, 2016, both the Board of Supervisors and the City of Ames City Council approved the preliminary plat. It also included waivers, agreements between landowners, which goes back to 2014. I think Chris Gardner, one of the property owners, will tell you that it was actually before 2014 where discussions occurred. But the waivers talk about agreeing to annex when the city determines that it's time for the property to be annexed. Information about paying the extension of utilities to the property and then buying out the Xenia Roll Water contract for that area. Final plat is before us today. Story County Land Development Regulations 87.09 sub 5 indicate that following the submittal of the preliminary plat, the developer can complete all the improvements within a year's time or submit the letter of credit or development agreement, which has occurred, and then the final plat may be submitted. So we're in Franklin Township. This is the aerial for the area. The property is outlined in red. It is the Ames Golf and Country Club. We're on the north and west side of the city of Ames. The city of Ames corporate limits is identified in blue. A little bit of history. Ames Golf and Country Club was a permitted use under our ordinance in the 70s under the agricultural zoning. A zoning permit was issued September 6, 1973 for the clubhouse and maintenance building. In October of 2006, the western portion, northern portion, which included about 55 acres, was rezoned to an R2 district to allow single-family and bi-attached two-family residential development. The golf course prior to last year was considered a legal but a non-conforming use. The applicant submitted a conditional use permit for the maintenance building, which has been constructed on the north end of the golf course. And then there's a proposed building for golf carts that will be located south of the maintenance building.
It's actually completed now.
Okay. Near the clubhouse. So now that changes the non-conforming status. Again, a little closer view, about 154 acres total. It's east of the Christ Community Church. It's also east of a few residential developments that are in the county: Jamison, Northwood Heights, Squaw Valley South, and Bella Woods. As also I mentioned, it's close to the city of Ames corporate limits, adjacent to the Union Pacific Railroad right-of-way. There are some scattered dwellings to the north, to the south. A little closer view, the access into the Ames Golf and Country Club is the same access point where the church is. There was an existing access north of that that was primarily serving that maintenance building. That access has been removed, as has that maintenance building. This is a concept drawing that was worked up during the preliminary plat process by Civil Design Advantage. It just shows you the proposed, what we would refer to as drives. The city of Ames is calling them streets for the bi-attached. There'll be units on the north side of the main drive going in and units on the south side going in. You have a cul-de-sac road which parallels George Washington Carver. There'll be an extension, a new road off of George Washington Carver that'll extend to this cul-de-sac road and eventually connect with Stang as it develops to the south. This just shows you the current zoning. Everything that's orange is R2, which allows single family and bi-attached. This is where the housing will be located. The A1 agricultural district is where the golf course is located. This is from the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. It's an agreement with the City of Ames, City of Gilbert. It goes back to 2006. There's an accompanying 28E agreement that was approved in 2011. And it's the rural transitional residential area, which is the yellow area that's shown in that black box area. In that area, for the most part, it talks about what the maximum density is, anywhere from one to up to just under three or four units per acre is what's permitted. Parks and recreation space is that green space, which is primarily where the golf course is located. The red and yellow dashed line represents the watershed protection area. Again, this is going to be under the City of Ames purview. They have a stormwater and erosion control plan. There's a stormwater permit that was issued, and they also have a phosphorus reduction plan, which initially the city wanted the phosphorus to be reduced by 6%, and through what they submitted, they were able to reduce it by 93 or 94%. Subdivision plats located in the rural transitional area of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. This is from the agreement. It talks about the three jurisdictions and acknowledging that the primacy of cities' interest in regulating development in the area really falls to the cities, especially if they have interest in annexing the area, and this would be one of those locations. It further states that in part that cities are tasked with giving primary review and if appropriate, approval of any proposed division of land. However, the county does have a role with the review, and we did provide that through the preliminary plat and now final plat.
So on this one, the City of Ames is in the lead, and we have the ability to weigh in, but the City of Ames is in the lead on this.
They are the primary regulator.
Okay.
In May of 2014, the Ames Golf and Country Club requested the Ames City Council to grant certain waivers to the city subdivision standards. In return for the granting of the waivers, this owner signed and submitted three required covenants that bind the current and future property owners, and they address these three things: applying for annexation at the time the city requested it, waiving objections to assessments that may be imposed in the future to extend public improvements, and then pay any fees associated with the buyout of the rural water. Also, waivers granted by the City Council allow Xenia to provide water service at this time, and rather than requiring connection to city water supply. Allow private septic systems, and they have specced out these Advantix on-site septic systems that they're using or proposing to use. A waiver of the requirement that lots take access from interior roads. There's three lots along the north, along 180th, that will have separate accesses. Two of those lots, though, will have a shared access point. So really, we're talking about two new access points. And the last thing was a waiver of the requirement that residential lots have a buffer from existing streets. The viewpoint here is that it's adjacent to a sizable golf course, which has green space. They are providing some additional green space through their detention pond development. You'll see that on some of the slides that are coming up. But those spaces can also be used by the landowners. Conditions that were included with the waiver request approved in 2014 are all public improvements will be treated as if they were in the city, requiring review of plans, on-site inspections, which those things have occurred, submittal of this city construction site erosion and sediment control permit, which they have submitted. Alternative compliance, because we're dealing with two separate different ordinances, thank goodness we have a provision in ours that allows for alternative compliance when the applicants have a plan that somewhat meets the intent of the ordinance. They can request alternative compliance. These are the five that they requested, and we're granted alternative compliance to. In an R2 district, there's a requirement for a common water, common wastewater system. Again, they're going with the individual on-site septic systems, Advantix systems. New lots required to have frontage to a public or private road. Again, the scenario would be bypassed. It is more viewed as a private drive type situation. The city refers to them as private roads, meeting their standards. There was some language about the turnarounds that were used in the bypassed area. Our ordinance requires for like a T situation so that when you maneuver, you're heading out face forward instead of backing out. 15% open space requirement for lots there. There are subdivisions that have more than 10 lots. And then two-family corner lot setbacks. And there were some adjustments through the review process that were made. They're meeting the setback from George Washington Carver, and then they made some adjustments on the layout. So they're actually achieving the objective with our setback requirements. So these are some drawings that were submitted for the preliminary plat. Again, 14 single-family lots. These are on the south end. Lot sizes range from just under 13,000 to about 3/4 acre. The county's minimum lot size is about 8,000 square feet. The there'll be a public road maintained by the property owners, both the road that will be extended from George Washington Carver and the cul-de-sac road. They will be installing a multi-use walkway east of the George Washington Carver. The bi-attached, 16 of those ranging around 7,400 square feet. Our minimum requirement is 3,000 square feet. And again, sidewalks will be constructed that will link the single family with the bi-attached, and there'll be linkages to the golf course as well. This just shows you the topography, the areas to the east of that cul-de-sac. This is where the cuts are occurring for the detention basins. Much of this area down here will be draining to that. The roads will be draining to those locations. This is also where we're borrowing for the buildup of the cul-de-sac road. On the north end, much of the same. This is where the cutting is occurring. This is where most of the drainage will occur from that development. West buffer yard, this is something that the city required. It's along the western portion of the single family and the bi-attached. You also see the landscaping proposed. and it's about 1.5 acres of open space. This just shows you conceptually the Advantix systems, how they're going to, you know, the plan is as far as the location on the site, and then the darker areas represent the, like, the lateral field locations. Dark red line, future sanitary sewer, just to show you how it would be that each of these lots would be connected from each individual site to the sanitary sewer. And then these are the bi-attached. We're into the final plat, finally. You'll see with the final plat, there's a lot less information that's required. But it shows you on the south end, the single-family homes, the bi-attached to the north. You've got outlot X and Y, which is where the price roads are with the open space. Outlot Z to the east, it's that triangle shape. That's where one of the detention basins is going to be. And then on the north end is where the three single-family lots will be. Again, the two on the east side, that there'll be one access point there. Again, the south end single-family home lots, the bi-attached, site photos. It was a cloudy day, but there's a lot of activity going on. April 18, we're looking west. This is the main drive going in, the golf course.
So that's the church across the street.
That's the church across the street. Looking east, Ames Golf and Country Club house, parking areas. Looking south, this is rough grade at this point. It's the bi-attached area. Looking north, this is the bi-attached area again. It's the turnaround location that we talked about. You see the workers. Looking north, south end of the bi-attached area. All this progress. They were stacked up.
All Chris sees is
Chris is smiling at this point. Dollar signs. Looking west at Cameron School Road. Looking north, George Washington Carver. We're going to be panning to the east. It was a muddy environment. Looking east near the south end of the single family dwellings. This is looking north. Again, this is rough grade. Looking west, back out on the road that's going to extend from George Washington Carver that'll hook up eventually to Stang. Review, there's been quite a bit of input from county staff. This is primarily just the final plat from the Environmental Health Department. Comments about that their department will be the primary reviewer. They're talking about the Advantix systems. Agreeing that the review of the analysis from the engineer on the soils will take place when the zoning permits are submitted for each of the dwellings. Auditor's office, comments about the legal description, comments about the road right-of-ways, the easements. County Attorney's office, we asked them to weigh in on providing input on some of the documentation that we received. We thought that the county should be named, and they were in agreement to that, and they provided amendments to those documents, adding the county's name. Many comments about documents that were submitted, including the sidewalk, several on the plat itself. This is more on the plat itself. A general comment, we sent notices out before the preliminary plat. We sent out notices before the final plat, received no comments. This is from the City of Ames, June 14, 5-1 vote. They approved it with these conditions, allow the 34 lots. This was the fifth submittal, including three lots on 190th. All public improvements will be treated as if they were in the city. Again, I kind of went through that. They were to submit this Casesco permit, complete the Xenia water, rural water buyout agreement, discussion about the Advantix systems, the phosphorus removal plan, adding this multi-use sidewalk, and then there's an agreement, like the first one, with regard to what the city and the developer agreed to. There's a fund that he put monies into for future use for a sidewalk. And county requirements, the 354.11 Code of Iowa dictates additional information that needs to be submitted. The city staff will shepherd that. That includes the property owner's consent, mortgage holder's consent, legal opinion from the attorney, restrictive covenants, which were submitted, the information, again, from the engineer on the soils that will be provided on a zoning permit basis for each of the dwelling units, development agreement, letter of credit. Chris came in last Friday, submitted the fees for the street names for all the roads. Points to consider, again, this goes back to 2006. With the rezoning, it was approved for this purpose, for single-family by-attached homes. It meets the intent of the Andover Fringe Plan agreement. Went through an extensive county and city of Ames review. The again, this goes back to 2014. Chris will tell you before then. Preliminary plat was approved, again, June 28th by the Board of Supervisors. Everything has been submitted. It's ready for action. It's going to go to the City Council tonight at their meeting, which brings us to the alternatives. We think everything is in order for the board to take action on this subdivision final plat, the Irons, which is SUB 02-16. It's resolution 1790. I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Questions for Jared before we open the public hearing?
None.
All right. What a thorough, well done presentation. So I happen to know that way back in 1984, there was a project that came forward out there on this ground, and it's amazing to think about that here we are 30-plus years later, and it finally appears that something's going to get done. So with that, if there's nothing else, I'll open the public hearing and ask if there is anyone who would like to address SUB 02-16. I see Linda Mergen approaching the microphone. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning. Hi, everybody. How are you?
We're good.
Good. Linda Mergen from Gilbert, Iowa. I happen to serve on the Planning and Zoning Commission, so I've been following this project for quite some time. You may know that the Planning and Zoning Commission originally voted against this and did not recommend it to the Board of Supervisors. I think all of the members had different reasons for that. I've seen a lot of work done on this. This is, you know, I see a lot of objections that have been taken care of and resolved. In my mind, there are two things that still remain. One is that I remember on that north side of the two family dwellings, there was a concern expressed about the length of that dead end, that was longer than we normally allowed in the county for development, and also that there was not a turnaround there and a concern about emergency vehicles. I remember the developers saying at that time, well, maybe they could fight the fire from Carver. That kind of concerned me. I don't know if there's been any more thought has been given to that, because an emergency vehicle, you know, you're going to need to get a tanker out there, you're going to need to get an engine out there, you know, you're going to end up with a very long dead end with huge emergency vehicles on it. I don't know where that is. Secondly, at the south, I understand that when the Borgmeyer property is sold at some point for development, the plan is for Stain to come up and curve around and meet Cameron School Road. That's going to make for a very busy intersection. We talked about that. Myself and another commission member travel that road because we live in that area of the county. And we're concerned about, you know, is a four-way stop, you know, going to be the only option
there?
It's
the perfect spot for the county's first roundabout, Linda.
Well, I don't think there's room with this plan.
To the south, there is.
Could it be?
Absolutely. It would take part of Borgmeyer and part of the land that I think has just been acquired by a local developer to the south and west of the intersection.
Okay, so would that be moving Cameron School Road south?
Cameron School Road would have to jog a little south.
It has to jog. Yep. Okay. that.
But still, there's still enough space if we were to sign this.
I'd kind of like to have Jerry weigh in on that if he thinks that would be something that the county would consider at that point, or his office would consider, because I think a four-way stop there would not be the best way to manage
that's
that.
That's more a Darren Moon.
That would be a Darren.
Okay,
and he's not here. Okay, that's all I had. I just wanted to mention those two things and the question.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, Jerry, as I heard you do your report, I thought you mentioned that and I think we're talking about the street into the north, the bi-attach, actually complies with all City of Ames requirements in terms of how they handle things like that with reference to emergency vehicles and items like that. And it's us, the county, offering alternate compliance to more closely mirror what the City of Ames allows.
Again, this went through the review process, as Linda stated, through the Zoning Commission. There were comments raised about the hammerhead and the length of the cul-de-sac. My recollection, it was a 5-1 vote in denial of it. It didn't come to the supervisors, and it was a 3-0 vote approving the alternative compliance items that were requested. I have not heard anything else about the fire protection, and I know Chris is here, but I know part of that is they wanted to make sure that the stub was long enough to allow for emergency response vehicles
right.
to access that, but... yeah, again, this is primarily, we don't have anything set up in regulations with regard to this street system. But again, it went through the city's
public
works,
right.
engineering, and they determined that this was, that it met their requirements and their.
Which, as I recall, when the board granted alternative compliance at that time, almost a year ago, it was. Alternative compliance based on meeting City of Ames standards.
Correct.
Chris, you look like you want to say something.
Yeah, we're going to get Chris. We're going to get Chris. I want to make sure Linda's done first. We're going to get Chris. And so, Linda, I'm with you on the intersection of Cameron School Road and George Carver. I think it's an overstatement to say it might get bad in the future. It's already bad. We already need to be thinking of some kind of impact there, and I think it's a conversation that the board needs to have with the county engineer, and the City of Ames clearly is going to be involved in that conversation of what kind of traffic patterns we need in that area. I think you're 100% right. We can't go north because of the church property, and now, assuming that this passes both this board and the city council, what's happening on the north side of Cameron School Road on both sides.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I think we lost an opportunity on 119th, and where Hyde becomes Grant becomes Gretton.
190th,
I'm
yeah.
sorry. I think we lost an opportunity there to do something other than a four-way stop. That's gone now. I would hate to see an opportunity lost here. Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
I might add, too, in our work program, we have a requirement to sit down with the engineering department and talk about things like
yep.
this proposed roundabout so that we're thinking about things more comprehensively than just looking at one development, that we're looking at what the impact would be to the roads and other services that are provided.
Yeah, so I've actually asked Darren to dig into what would be required to put in a roundabout there, because I think it's something that we're going to need to consider down the road. It just it has not come to us yet. And the reality is, once the church property was allowed where it is, we lost our opportunity to put a roundabout that encompassed all four corners right there. Everything had to move south. So anybody else before we go to the developer? We're still in public hearing. Okay, Chris, I have you come up. My first question for you, Chris, you moved a lot of dirt out there. How many cubic yards of dirt did you end up moving?
130,000 cubic yards, which is 13,000 dump trucks, to put it in a little bit easier terms.
Yeah. I went out and took a look at it Sunday. It's the first time I've been out there in 6 or 8 months, and it is, the work that's been done is really, really amazing. So let's start with that north stub, since that's a concern that not only our Planning and Zoning Commission brought up, but it was brought up in the public hearing today. Talk to us about that. And
the biggest challenge was dealing with the two entities, the City of Ames Fire Chief and the Gilbert Fire Chief. Expressly wanted to act like that. They actually gave us the specs from the city engineer and the city fire chief to us to use the exact specs for that turnaround. They said, this is what City of Ames standards, this is what we have to use. However, that did not align with the county's rules. So we had two different things. I couldn't make both people happy. And so this case, I really did try. So according to the 28E, Ames takes precedence, so we had to go with Ames on this. So I didn't have a choice. That was the... Yeah.
Which was the rationale, I believe, that the Board of Supervisors used back then to grant alternative compliance.
Correct, yeah. Yep.
Questions for Chris?
Well, I see this going forward is the future of Ames. Ames probably should be speaking most heavily to it. We did take this up when the Planning and Zoning Commission said no. I get it. But this is going to be City of Ames here in the near future, and I look forward to it coming out of the ground.
Yeah, thank you.
Laura, questions?
And more comments.
Yeah.
I spent several hours reading all of the material, and it was really well informed on this. And then Jerry came up about 4:30 last night to kind of bring me up to speed on a couple of questions. It looks like you took a project with a lot of concerns and obstacles and did appear to meet everyone's satisfaction. I was impressed by the time I got through it all and figured it all out. So I just wanted to thank you. In my previous years as a journalist, I saw some developers who were not so willing to try to accommodate and try to address everyone's concerns.
Thank you.
Super.
John, last question. Just being curious, what are the street names for both?
Barney Cheney
Drive. Yeah. I tried that one. They didn't allow it. No, the City of Ames just wanted to call Irons Court.
Okay.
Yeah, we tried to actually do Curtis Court.
That would have been nice. And, Larry Curtis pushed really, really hard. Former mayor of Ames, before he passed away, he pushed really, really hard for a project like this. He was actually one of the instigators back in 1984 and then had been involved all the way through.
Isn't that name already taken?
That was the problem. Ames just wasn't allowed because there is a Curtis and this with 911 and stuff. So we're just going to do a nice monument to him and some sort of monument in the Irons landscaping monument that we'll do. So.
Very good. Outstanding. No more questions. Anything else?
That's it.
All right, we'll close the public hearing. I'll turn to the board for action on Resolution 1790.
I would so move adoption of Resolution 1790.
I would second that.
Motion second. Further discussion. I would just say, Jerry, great job pulling all this together. Chris, thanks for being flexible and working with us to get all this pulled together. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. 1790 passes. Good luck tonight.
Yep.
So now we are to additional items. We've handled the first on additional items, so we're to number two, discussion and consideration for replacement hardware and installation of core switch upgrade between IP Pathways and IT for $117,230. This technology stuff is expensive, Barb.
Good morning, Board. Barb Steinbach, IT.
Good morning.
And this is a budgeted item, but the reason I'm bringing it to you this morning is this $27,000 over budgeted amount of $90,000. To give you a little history, it'll explain why we're proposing this better solution. When we pulled quotes back in December of 2015 for this project, the vendor suggested that we just replace the cards within the core switches, and that would have been $90,000. Looking back, and at that time, Kyle was just a new network administrator replacing cards. Yep, that sounds like an easy task, so we're going to do that. But We've had some developments recently. The manufacturer has now set an end of life for these boxes that the core switches are in. And then last month we had a power failure on one of the switches. So, and they are 11 years old. It doesn't make sense in my mind. Back in 2012, we did the same thing, updated the cards. It doesn't make sense for an 11-year-old box to keep updating the cards. We really need to go with the whole box itself.
Has technology advanced in the last 11 years? We can't just keep using the same thing?
Yes. So that's why we're proposing, and we did get three quotes. This was the lowest, but it's also a trusted vendor that we've worked with on other projects. So we are proposing the $117,000 quote, and I'll let Kyle dig into the quote a little more if you'd like. But we do have, we're going to cut some items in other areas, but we do have the money to cover this in our budget. So I think we'll be good there.
Okay, so you're not asking for any additional money in your budget. This is absolutely what you recommend as the correct solution for Story County going forward.
Yes.
We could listen to Kyle tell us a whole bunch of stuff that none of the three of us will understand. Kyle, is there anything that we need to know about this and what it does for us?
The only thing that I would mention is that with this solution, we'll be good for another 10 to 12 years. So.
Questions?
I'd like to know about the other two bids. What did they come in at?
The one net quote came in at 97, and it would be.
But that did not include installation.
Right. Didn't include any engineering services, and then the bid amount was the 90,000. That was just replacing the cards.
Okay. So the one that did it bid service separately for the service or the installation then? I mean, so it was, what was that total bid then?
They gave us an hourly quote, but they couldn't give us an overall quote because they didn't really know what the project would entail. So they left that open-ended, and I don't like that kind of a quote.
And then my next question is IT Pathways. I saw that name as we were having some issues, correct, with the Internet slowdown?
Yeah, the Internet slowdown is in relation to our telecom vendor. It just happened that IT Pathways was here on site, but it's not related to anything that they've done.
They're helping us work through that.
Yep.
Thank you.
And you mentioned trusted vendor. They've been a vendor that we've been happy with the service they provided for us in the past.
Absolutely.
Okay. Good. Other questions?
None.
Just a comment or request that in the future when bids come, when we get requests for proposals or bids, I'd like to know who the other people are who bid and what their bid amount was.
Okay. Good. If there's no other discussion, I would take a motion on that.
Move consideration for replacement hardware and installation of core switch upgrade for Story County between IT Pathways and Information Technology for $117,230.50.
We have a motion and a second. I just underscore that we're going to be able to, this is above what we had budgeted for this item, but we're going to be able to absorb it in existing dollars in IT. Anything further? Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Board.
No agency reports, no departmental reports. We do have other reports. We got the quarterly financial report that I think was on last week's agenda, and I've just been having such anticipation to get to this week after we pulled it last week.
Good morning, Mrs. Martin.
Good morning. Yeah, I try to get it to you as soon after the quarter ends as possible, but last week was just a marathon, so, you know, I think this week is a little bit, well, maybe not. Okay, so what you have in front of you is 75% of the year. In this report, as you can see, I've highlighted the departments that are over 75% of the year. Almost every department, however, is getting a budget amendment because of salaries, so those do not concern me too much at this point in time because we know that it's related to where they're at with the year and the salaries. So we have seven departments that are over. Overall, we're at 62%, or almost 63% of our expenditures. The fund balance status, we are at 66% of our expenditures in the general fund, so we're under the 75% there. In fact, none of the funds are over the 75% of the year. The revenue report, there are 10 departments that are over the 75%, and we are at 93% of our revenues for the year. So that's coming in good. Now, that's not uncommon, just because the remaining taxes came in March 31st mostly. So they still process a few in April, I would assume, but not the bulk of them.
But everything's looking pretty solid, and you would feel fairly secure at this point that we're going to do better than budget,
yes.
Not worse than budget. Questions for Lisa?
Great story. I have to say it's very nice to be part of an organization that runs its operation in this respect, as you hear about others that don't.
If you can have a tight budget and then do better than that, generally things work out pretty well.
Okay.
Any questions for Lisa?
None.
We need a motion to...
No, we don't.
We don't need to accept
it?
No. Okay, just information.
To report.
Good. Thanks, Lisa. Next item is discussion for process for Board of Supervisors appointments to Story County Boards and Commissions. Deb, are you coming up for this one along with Ethan?
Sure.
So this is another one that Laura's asked to have on there as we talk through the last three appointments. We did one a week ago, and we did two this morning. And just wanted to talk through what our process currently is, what it has been in Story County, and see if there's any modifications that this board would like to make going forward. Laura, would you like to start us off?
Well, I just to reiterate from what I said last week, first of all, asking us to appoint people without background information or some kind of recap, first of all, on what the position they're going to fill or their duties are. Second of all, what qualifications they bring in. That's a very awkward position. I think it's due diligence for us to at least see that information. Second of all, I believe that we could do a process that included all three of us by, as I understand, used to be done anyway, where each person could be interviewed sequentially by the board so that there was not an issue when it comes to violation of the open meetings law. There was expressed some concern about privacy of the individuals. I think also now it's come to my attention after last week in discussions with other people that, I think it's also we'd like to know who else applied for that, although we would take care of that through the interview process. I bring it up as a separate point in case for some reason we don't end up with all three of us interviewing each person and therefore... one person or two people not knowing who else applied. I believe in general that appointments, the more people who vet people for appointments, and especially when it's the supervisors who are voting on it, the more diversity we might get in some of these when there are multiple applicants. Each of us might consider different qualities, different beliefs, different backgrounds to be appropriate, and that at least gives all of us an ability to ask questions. I'm not comfortable with one person handling all the appointments.
So it seems to me that there's, four possibilities that I can come up with that Story County has used in the past. One is the Board of Supervisors gather together and interview collectively each applicant and then discuss and make a decision of who they're going to recommend that comes out here to a public meeting. That is an absolute clear violation of open meetings laws, and it was a practice that I think was rightly stopped here in Story County. Second one, is that the board and commission in question just kind of put forward who they want on their board and commission. That's been done in the past in Story County. That's problematic because then you get this self-fulfilling prophecy of what a board and commission looks like. Third opportunity, I think, is what you're suggesting is, I'll go with what we're currently doing and then we'll go to what you're suggesting. So what we're currently doing is, your duly elected chair that the Board of Supervisors gets to elect for itself has worked with staff to come up to interview all those interested, keep their names in private because nobody, we have enough trouble getting people to apply. Nobody wants to be part of a list that's, or not nobody, most don't want to be part of a list that's discussed in a public meeting and, oh no, we're not going to pick that person because they don't fit this category or that category, and get kind of a public rejection like that. And so previous board felt like, you know what, we elect a chair. We elect a chair for a reason. It's one of the extra responsibilities they take. And so that's what we're currently doing. And what I'm hearing you suggest is, and I need more clarification from you, Laura, so I'm hearing you suggest that we would bring somebody in and have them go, basically, and I'm oversimplifying, but they go from office to office to office to have an interview process, and then talk to me about what happens from that point to a recommendation coming to the Board of Supervisors, because that's what I'm unclear on.
Okay. After the three had interviewed, at that point, I see that the staff person would put together the same information along with a broader sheet that comes before, say, who this person nominations are. And then we would, in a public meeting, select either our top two applicants to re-vote on, or we would one of us would make a motion and say, I move for this person, and then the other two would either second or go on.
So everybody that applies would come and be part of a public meeting for us to discuss them in a public meeting.
No, they would not have to appear.
No, they would be discussed. So Joe Smith applies, and Joe Smith would be discussed as part of the public meeting, and we would say, no, we don't really want Joe Smith.
Well, that is how it would have to be executed. It would be. As far as how much discussion occurs in that scenario, for us to say, okay, I nominate Joe Blow, all right, or Jenny Blow, because I feel Jenny has these five requirements or meets these five needs. And then if there was a second, there'd be a second, and then we would vote on it. If there was not a second, then another person would nominate a different person, saying that I believe these qualifications meet the job position, and then there would be a vote on it. That therefore at least gives all of us the opportunity to interview, all of us to put forward what we feel are the qualifications that are most important in filling the job. And it may be a 2-1 vote. If there are three people and one person may get 2-1, and the first person nominated may not get a second on it. It sounds messy from the standpoint of people and are feeling good about themselves, but I think it's the fairest way to do it. I certainly don't see any other way that we can vote and select someone without having it in a public meeting, and I think it's too important to definitely leave it with having one person do all.
Yeah, and so it's not one person, it's the board approving. And so one of the places that I am completely with you is it makes complete sense to me that the entire board should be able to see the complete bio of whoever is being recommended. I've been here long enough now to know how hard it has been traditionally to generate interest from people to serve on our boards, especially when you start talking about some of the gender balance requirements that we rightly have, some of the location that you live within the county, whether it's in a municipality or outside. And there are many, many times in the past that Story County has had we've gone with vacancies on boards for months and months and months because we could not generate enough interest. We have finally put a system in place that we seem to be having multiple people express interest for each position we've got.
Right.
And I hate the thought of losing that, but I've seen the other ways to do it, and I believe we are going to lose that if we go down the road of saying to everybody who applies, okay, you are now going to be discussed in a public meeting that's recorded to determine whether you're worthy to be on a board or commission?
Well, that behooves somewhat for us on a control basis, self-control basis, about only listing the positive attributes of why we feel this person is qualified, and then moving on. So yes, you're being discussed, but not necessarily, we're not bringing you up to trash you. We're not bringing you up to discuss negatives. We're going to discuss the positive attributes of each person. I'd like to ask Linda Merkin, since she said last week that she went through a process, exactly what I'm describing.
Not exactly what you're describing.
Okay, Linda, what happened at the end?
Yeah, come on so we can hear you, Linda.
I don't know the things that I wasn't privy to. I just know I was interviewed sequentially by the three supervisors, Rick being one of them.
Absolutely.
And I received notice in the mail, the form that is similar to what you've attached to your agenda, and it's signed by Paul, saying I had been appointed. I think, but can I have another thing?
Sure.
There are three people in this room who applied for the interim supervisor vacancy a year ago. All of 15 people, all of our information was public. The process the vacancy committee used to select you, Marty, was motions made by a three-person body in a public meeting. We were required to give a public presentation. There were 15 people who were interested in the interim.
That's a different position, Linda.
It is a different
position. It's an elected position.
It is a different position.
We'd be lucky. We would be lucky to get 15 applications for some of our boards and commissions. I think this wouldn't even be an issue if that were the case.
Well, going back, though, to get away from that process. Oh, thanks, Linda.
Thanks, Linda.
Getting back to not having them do the public presentations part of this, okay?
Would you like to, I guess, having been through it with you, with Linda, would you like to pull the podium up and then we do that process? If you really want to give them the opportunity to speak to us in a way that they make their case on their behalf for their appointment, why don't we just use that process you just articulated that we all participated in?
I agree with Rick that it's a different position we were looking for. For one thing, we were asking for a paid position, okay?
But you're holding out the model as something that we would do, but then I would say if that model has currency, let's apply it.
I'd like to go back to the rationale that Rick's talking about, is that now there's only one person and a staff member interviewing. All these people are stepping forward. And I don't believe that's the reason people are stepping forward. I believe that maybe members of this, at least the two of you so far, because I haven't really had an opportunity to do reach out, have been talking to more people about there are openings. And people on the boards that these people are being appointed to are, I think, saying, hey, we've got an opening on the board. Why don't you apply for it? We don't have any scientific base about where people go through periods where no one applies and people do. I've seen it go cyclical both over in the city and know that the mayor's had problems at times.
And how does the city appoint?
And the city appoints, the mayor appoints. The mayor is a separate, wholly elected position. And the mayor doesn't vote at council meetings unless there are certain really strict restrictions. I think it's resolutions, right? She can break a tie or something like that. And so the role is different. You are a full policy maker here on this board, or any, let's say whoever is sitting in that chair, is a full policy maker on the board, which gives you a vote already when it comes down to whatever these people are going to do in most of these boards and commissions, that's going to come before us to begin with. And so I like that all of us would be able to screen. We may not always have the person that has the attributes we would like due to the fact we're voting
on the person. I mean, you know, if we've got multiple. But I'm not comfortable with just one person and then one staff person making these selections. I think there would be other ways. I would be willing to look at other ways. Another way would be, I understand the VA appointment is coming up. And in this particular situation, the chair of the VA, Veterans Affairs Committee is going to be interviewing. And maybe having been, another way might be, well, I don't know, another staff person is difficult, as I think this through, because that's going to take the lead of whoever the elected official is, the supervisor on it. But I feel good about the VA having the chair of the board there, because at least there's another person screening who truly understands this commission. But I still, my first choice is, let's have us all three interview them. We don't know how it got to the point. Rick, how did it get to the point that Linda was? What happened?
So hypothetically speaking,
okay,
you got to help me through this one. So hypothetically speaking, it's possible that back in that day and age when, boy, you would have eaten this up as a candidate, Lars. Back in those days, the board would interview all three sequentially, and then there would either be either the then chair of the board would go to each board member and say, who did you like? Or there would be a staff member who would go to each board member and say, who did you like? And the board would find a way to come to consensus, and it would go on the agenda. As we had learned from Warren County, if that had ever happened in Story County, it would have been completely inappropriate for it to happen in Story County.
Right.
And
we live in more enlightened times.
And Story County does not do that. And I would oppose Story County going back to anything that resembled that.
So the objection, as I hear it, is that for us to vote in public is because we would be discussing the positive attributes best fit for this and taking a vote in public.
So I think it's too onerous on trying to get a robust application pool for volunteer positions. I think, Loris, I come down really, really closely to where you are in suggesting that maybe the chair of the board and or commission that we're talking about filling could participate in the interview process. I got to tell you this, though. I've heard you do this a couple times, both in meetings and out of meetings, and I'm just uncomfortable with it. I don't think this is how you mean it. But you say the word just staff like it's a negative thing. Like, oh, they're just staff. They don't have any place went in. We are so fortunate to have the staff we have. We're so fortunate to have Deb Shildroth and her expertise steering this process to be a true sounding board so that we get to good decisions. And it really makes me uncomfortable when I feel you demean somebody based on them just being staff.
But I don't demean from that standpoint, and I've already explained to her once that in a conversation we had, it's not as in just staff to demean. It is that there is a difference in roles. And
yeah, the role is staff is professional, expert, and has the sole job of making sure that the board's policies and direction are followed and that we're following process. And I would argue that that's exactly who we want to be part of the process.
I having the part of the screening process, because that's what Deb does, or any staff member having a part of the background staff screening process, making sure that they are followed, certainly preparing a report to our expectations as far as to go up in front of us and in public. Those are all very important staff roles. We are the ones elected to make decisions. And when I have talked about the difference between staff and elected to make decisions, that really making the decision is where the line gets drawn. And anything that staff would do that might help direct that decision to other than providing all points, providing information on all of these applicants, separately. We're appointing someone. I think when we do policy or staff weighs in on policy, they can provide background information. They can provide maybe, well, certainly we've got a lot of staff here who have decades of experience. They certainly can provide information on background and what has been tried before. They can help analyze what is different, okay? It's when it comes to the actual decision-making, and maybe I misunderstand this relationship, that is Deb actually making a recommendation and helping make the decision? All right.
I mean, well, I'd ask you to speak to this. My view of your role in this is to facilitate the process, to make sure that there's consistency, to make sure that we're dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's. And I absolutely use Deb as a sounding board. After each interview, I say, so these are the kind of things I noticed. What do you think? What, you know, and really use Deb to help me organize my thoughts about what we just saw. Are you feeling something different when we talk through this?
No, and that's true. I mean, I'm facilitating the process. I'm looking at the applications. We had one instance where an individual actually didn't live in the county, so we caught that before that person went through the interviewing process, and I talked to that person about that. But I'm taking notes through the interviews and providing that information and things that I may have picked up just to consider, but I'm not making a recommendation. I just really see myself as the worker bee, I guess, in that process, and assist in finalizing or wrapping up anything that needs to happen before it goes to the board, getting it on the agenda. And we do. We have the VA commission vacancy. We have two vacancies on asset. And we've got condemnation board vacancies coming up as well.
And I definitely, talking about this was coming up, I really on the asset board, you know, would like to be able, as a supervisor, to screen who's on the asset. Assets are undergoing a lot of changes, and there's some different philosophy about when they sit through the process. I mean, I've sat through that process for years. The other ones, you know, Terry Greenfield being there, the chair of the board is a start. We don't even have a chair of the board per se. There's an asset board chair, but it may not even be somewhat associated closely with Story County. I don't know that there's any evidence here that we will lose applicants by letting them know that they need to be, that there will be a somewhat screening process in public.
History argues with that.
Well, and I know, you know, I've gotten up and spoken to this in the past as when the board has discussed the lack, previous boards have discussed the lack of applicants. And when I started asking the board members, well, where do you find your applicants? And specifically, we were talking about gender balance at that point when I raised that issue a few years ago. And I started listening to where the reach out was going, and I realized that the reach out was very narrow and focused. So part of that has to do with an expansion of the reach out itself. I've always been concerned whether it somewhat be the city in the past, a city of Ames in the past, and certainly I want someone, you know, as the board, for a while there seemed to be reaching out to the people who serve on everything else, okay? And there's a lot of people out there who can serve well on boards who maybe don't have the same pedigree as the rest of the board members, but they have an interest, or it's from a different area, or they don't belong to the same social groups, or the same service club, etc. So I think it behooves us to go ahead and go out there and see if we can still get good applicants on it. And good meaning people who will be devoted, who will show up, who will take the time to learn the issues, who will represent a variety of voices.
I think we've got a system in place that does just that right now. I agree with all those things. I think that is one of the things that I know I look for, and I would hope either of you would look for if you were chair, is making sure that we have boards and commissions that are diverse, that work, that bring multiple viewpoints. And I'll just say this about the three recommendations that I made, one that we appointed last week and two that we appointed this morning. I had never met any of the three of them prior to interviewing them. It's not like Story County right now is doing a great job really getting outside the box and not just recycling, as you mentioned, can be a very, and was a problem in Story County. We would recycle like crazy because we didn't have anywhere else to go because it is so difficult to get individuals to apply. The other thing I'll say is, this board, in my mind, gets to weigh in on this item as it currently exists two times. They get to weigh in when they elect the chair, because it's the three people up here who elect the chair, and two, they get to weigh in when the chair makes a recommendation on who we should appoint. And so I'm all in on the idea that we should have the full application available as part of our public meeting when we make a recommendation to appoint. I'm also agree that getting another voice, another more expert voice, and that would probably mean chair or representative from our board or commission that we're talking about filling the spot to sit in and weigh in. But at the end of the day, I cannot think of a better way to get to a recommendation. There's only two ways to get to a recommendation. Either the board is going to have one of us make the recommendation for the three of us to vote on, or we're going to go through the full discussion of every applicant out here. And I absolutely believe that it will negatively impact the pool that we have to draw from.
Will you be open to rotating which supervisor does the interviewing on an appointment?
This board's got to decide. So I'm one of those that I believe that if this is appropriately rests with the chair, and if this board wants a different chair, this board can select a different chair. That's one of the things that I think the chair is elected to do. The chair signs documents on behalf of the board. The chair should represent the board at things like state of the community and different things like that, and I think the chair is the one to bring forward a recommendation to the full body for the full body to consider.
In this particular case, I don't see where the harm would be. In fact, I think that there would be benefit if we rotated two of them. You're saying the chair should do that wherever. If I were sitting in the chair's position, I'd be happy to share this duty. What you've listed there does some of the other duties, I think, meet the order, meet the need, meet the requirements to just for us to move forward and conduct business. Rotating through the interview, rotating through about whose responsibility it will be to interview applicants for the next appointment, I don't think interrupts the order of the conducting of business at all.
Yeah, I mean, you may be right. I happen to see it differently. I view that we elect a chair for a reason. It is the one, well, that and vice chair, it's the two positions that we select where we designate one of us to go above and beyond what's expected of the rest of us. And so I get it. From a consistency point of view, I would always rather, and at the times I haven't been chair, so I've been chair now in 5 of the 7 years that I've been here, but in the years that I was not chair, or part of years that I was not chair, I completely deferred to the chair to handle these kind of things, and I think that's where I'll continue to be even when I'm not sitting in this chair with this board.
Because there's only 3 of us on the board, to develop a good working relationship, we know, and just to move forward with policy as we've already been trying to do, is that all of us can be equal partners. So it's hard to follow that philosophy when one's chair, one's vice chair, and then one is just a member of the board. And so I feel that if we keep the delineation of the duties of the chair and then the vice chair when the chair takes over to those that are more organizational to move business forward, to represent us in public as official, I see that is where we all still get to be equal. equal members of the board. This would be a great way to show that we are all equal members of this board.
Well, so a couple things. One, we are all equal members of the board, but we do have a chair and a vice chair. We all get one vote when something comes before us. As far as talking about this board developing a good working relationship, you and I both know how hard I've worked over the last 4 months to actually have that happen. You even stopped and said something about that. There are things that fall to the chair. And have fallen to the chair over the last 4 months to help have that working relationship, help provide some consistency. While you spoke against it last week, help provide that sense of history and precedent and things like that. All those, I believe, fall to the chair, and I think it falls to any chair that's sitting here. I think that's the way a good organization works. Too many chefs in the kitchen make for some interesting stew every once in a while, and I believe having some consistency in process is really, really important. The other thing I'll say is, Loris, I use the word we and the board and us together in everything I do, and you hear it. And I hear you use the word I. So you just put out a survey to staff that has a little flow chart on the top that lists Loris Olson at the top of the flow chart. Not the Board of Supervisors, but Loris Olson on the Board of Supervisors. I hear you say, well, I don't want us to enter into a contract with ICE. I hear you use the word I and individual and Supervisor Loris Olson, and I work really, really hard, Loris, to say us, we, Board of Supervisors, and that I get uncomfortable when I see you starting to want to exert individual influence over this.
And I get uncomfortable when I hear we does not represent us as a unified body. So there are times when it's appropriate, I think, for each of us to use I, because we represent our viewpoints, we represent our beliefs about how something organizes. So I do get just very uncomfortable when you say we, when it does not really reflect what's happening. As far as listing a project, being listed as a project manager, I believe that the two of you said this to take this on.
And represent us.
Okay. All right. So, Loris Olson, project manager representing the Board of Supervisors, which I believe is how the information went out on behalf of the Board of Supervisors. Okay. I believe Leah put that in. All right. And we're going to bring it to us for votes, but you already had a problem to begin with in this situation. You've got two senior managers that you both, on their employment plans, their duty plans, both say that they're in charge of a website refresh / redesign. And so part of the decision that we made, since we're going to go ahead and talk about this, is that somebody needed to be in charge as far as facilitator of it. Now, if you don't want me to facilitate this and to apply my background here, certainly the three of us can sit at this board table every time, just like we've all kind of taken on things. Marty has taken on a lot when it's come to Drainage District 5 and taken the lead of that. And if I hear Marty come and say, well, I don't think this is a good idea, I'd like to see this, I don't think of it as being a negative. I think about it as Marty's the one who's been dealing with all the landowners in Drainage District 5. He has an opinion of it, and it's going to be an informed opinion on it. So, I thank you for pointing out. I don't like we. You don't like I. You think that, I guess, I don't interpret what you think about that. But I feel very comfortable in what I put out there. But we can certainly issue a change that says the Board of Supervisors is the project manager here. So when you've got, we called that meeting together in my office and tried to align where everybody's responsibilities were, considering their job positions, say they're going to do the same thing.
Okay, so you're taking it and you're going one step too far, which is fine. But What I firmly believe is we asked you to represent us in leading that process. There has never been a time since I've been paying attention to Story County, and I would actually look to Deb, who has been around for many, many years, there's never been a time that we've seen something go out from the Board of Supervisors office that listed anything other than the Board of Supervisors managing it. It would be one member of the Board of Supervisors, hopefully somebody with some expertise, but it was just really interesting. It was really telling to me. And so you just went back and forth there over two statements. You talked about, first, the need for this board to have unity and get along, and it'd be a great show of unity. And then you spent the next 10 minutes talking about how this board needs to be more individual and not we, and everybody has their own viewpoint. And when I say we for the Board of Supervisors, it is because of that is where the Board of Supervisors is. It might be a 2-1 vote that got us there. It might be a 2-1 vote against me, but it would still be we. The Board of Supervisors made this decision. The Board of Supervisors set this precedent. The Board of Supervisors operates in this manner. It wouldn't be Rick Sanders decided.
I think it is a lot that Rick Sanders does decide, and so maybe I am. You know, maybe it's subconscious. I think that this whole issue that brought us, that we're all discussing right now, is a good indication of you just assumed that we would continue doing our appointments the same way. You just assumed that we would continue to do that. We would like that.
That
we would accept
it. It was more pressure.
Well, but...
Until
you have a new board.
Until the board decides to do something different, we continue to operate as we have.
Right. Well, we're sitting here now, deciding to do if we're going to do something different or not, and you're resisting it because you, Rick Sanders, have a right as a member of the board to say that you think it works best that way.
Absolutely.
All right. That's you, Rick. It's not we. Rick Sanders.
Sure, but the difference is when this board makes a decision, whatever decision it makes, it will in fact be we.
Okay,
right.
And it will be we when a plan is brought forward. But what you now are saying, that it's inappropriate for any of us to try and lead a project.
That's not what I said. That's not even close to what I said.
But that's what I'm doing. I am leading a project. The two of you and I spoke about this, and you guys said, yeah, you're the perfect one to lead it for several reasons.
I still believe that.
So I make a comment about it, and we put out for the staff. They want to know who's going to be doing what in this project. And who is doing what in this project is Leanne's handling one part, Alyssa's handling the specials, and Barb is handling the hardware technology part, and I am the one who is sitting there helping to facilitate it. Not the three of us. I am the facilitator. Then when we need decisions made, we're coming to have the three of us done. So I appreciate you sharing that you felt that I put myself out there in some other position. I will remember that then, okay, as we start showing about who else leads projects around here.
Who else represents the board in different areas? 100%, Laura. So where you're missing this is the board absolutely asked that you represent us.
Okay, and that's what the note that went out.
This project. No, the note that went out said that Morris Olson is the be-all, end-all, and everything else reports through Morris Olson. Take a look at the note again.
I know exactly.
That's different than anything
that's
ever
come out. I know what is laid out there. I know what is laid. And the actual memo says, on behalf of the Board of Supervisors.
I will be. That's what it says.
Okay.
I'm just telling you.
All right. We can tie up the rest of these people all the day. It's very clear where the division in this board lies. And it's very clear about we have shared different opinions about where each one of us is able to lead a project without having to be subjected to something like that. Okay. So now, of you want everything that I put out, everything that I do to come through you first.
No, I want you to represent the board as a member of this board. That's what I want.
Marty, have you ever used I in talking to any of the people with the drainage district or talking to any of the staff?
I didn't say you couldn't use I.
I'm going back to where we started this. I haven't spoken. I've been watching the clock here, folks. I'm coming up in 40 minutes. I haven't said anything. You guys, take a breath. To me, went through the interview, spent all of yesterday afternoon with Leanne interviewing four candidates for a building principalship. Hired her last night. Got a great haul there. Do this. But there are things that just through on a ministerial exercise of office, you are elected to be set at this board, and you in turn are elected to be in a capacity for this board. Signing the document, there's a pile of what a chairman does. I mean, we ask to have this done on our behalf. To me, this is small ball housekeeping. I'm not uncomfortable with the process we have right now because it's been done in a way that I don't see disservice. I would like you to point to a person that is setting or has sat on a board or commission that was not up to the task. I'm looking for a little there.
I don't know. I would need to research that.
Well, I'm just saying, if we were to fix something, give me a reason why would I even attempt it.
It allows more voices. It allows...
Do we have it out there, though? It's on the website. We hold out our positions on an availability basis, and we are not going to go, and I have no intention of going door-to-door to find these people. We hold ourselves out on a reasonable basis that we have a need to sit on a commission. If you see yourself on a skill set, here is the process that you would go through to make you aware to us. And in turn, we do an internal function. I don't always know who's going through. It has not risen to my mind that this is a process that's broken.
I do. All right. Do we take a question?
Well, actually, I'd like to go a little further. You guys have talked enough. Take a breath.
Okay.
Ethan, if we were to do this process of talking to these individual candidates, are there questions that we can't ask them?
I think it's important, like the board has been discussing here, on what constitutes a meeting. And so, the Hutchinson v. Shaw case in Warren County, these proxies or these moving quorums do constitute a meeting. So that's a specific question, and that my advice, my recommendation would be not to do it that way. But again, what the process you're describing is a ministerial function of the board. You need to decide amongst the board on how to handle these appointments moving forward. Now, the board has the statutory mandate to appoint lots of different boards, committees, and commissions. And like Rick alluded to, some of these come from Veterans Affairs, some from Conservation Board. There's lots of different ways these come to you. But I think the board needs to be make a decision amongst themselves how they handle these appointments. I guess my recommendation, keeping in mind the restrictions that are imposed through different sections of Iowa Code concerning nepotism, gender balance, residency requirements, those types of things are something you need to consider. Those are addressed to the application process, I would think. But just to keep in the back of mind that you are restricted by these different court decisions, these different statutes, but there's no real definitive framework that you must follow in handling appointments. I think however the board decides amongst itself to handle appointments is the legally permissible thing to do.
So we're not bound by if we have a rolling series of candidates that we have listed the rules of the road as what questions we can ask and not ask, and would we have to keep it to a specific time frame for fairness to all applicants?
It's the distinction, legal distinction, which the courts debate amongst themselves is what is information gathering. And what's deliberation or discussion? So that's where these fine line distinctions have the potential of being crossed in the situation you described. And that could create the legal liability or the
Well, that's I'm looking for a little guidance here.
That's the concern.
If you're doing
the thing is, I don't want us to get into the point that all of a sudden there's a rousing 40-minute discussion that comes to a conclusion in the person's mind versus the 10 to 15, a little more sterile, more on to task, and that they feel like, well, hey, I didn't get equal, you know, process here. Mm-hmm. I won't expose the board to that. I will not put myself in jeopardy for that. I look for counsel in that respect, and your proposal should reflect that counsel's advice. Mm-hmm. I think you did. I don't know if you could tell the room got brighter, but when you asked Linda to step up here and speak to a process that we all went through, I don't see if we're asking people on in a public forum or in a public record to submit for a public position. I say that if we want to give them equal opportunity to earn our votes, we do that in a public meeting. We've got a podium in this room. We all did it. Is it comfortable? No. But let the best person win and carry the day. That would be what I would want to see. If we're going to move from this model, that, because of that presentation here, that's what I would insist on doing. Other than that, I will leave this alone. And if that causes us hardship, that we're not getting an application pool, then maybe we have moved to a model that I can admit wrong. You know, I don't know if all parties up here could. But I don't see, we have openings. I think what the process I would like to see, is there anything we could do to get more applicants out there to submit to us to fill these holes? Because we put these things out here to help us do the governance of the county, and it's a business for its citizens. We have things we need to do, but once again, I said as board president, I do these things on behalf of the school district, and I've done it for years. This is just part and parcel of what a board asks you to do as their elected leader. I have no nefarious concerns. I would have comfort in you doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sitting here trying to decide in my mind, well, we're going to turn around here next January. Who am I going to vote for, you know, chair and vice chair? And, you know, you are starting to make a compelling argument why I would consider you. If you, you know, and then I would then turn to you and say, what is good for the goose is good for the gander.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I'll make a motion. A motion that we would go to, if I understand what Marty just said, is that we would have all applicants come before us.
In open meeting.
In open meeting. Okay, all applicants come before us in open meeting to make your case. We might ask some questions, and then we would vote in open meeting for an appointment.
Okay,
well, I asked for it, and I'll second it.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. This board absolutely has the right to set any legal process that we want. This is absolutely, Ethan, unless you tell me different, this would be a legal process for determining boards and commissions. I think if we support this, we're really going to see a drop off in those interested in coming before us to serve on our boards and commissions, and I think that will be a problem. But if this board wants to do it, let's go. Further discussion.
I would have to say we are probably, if we set ourselves in what we perceive to be the path of we aren't getting the applicants, mm-hmm. we need to revisit this, and once again, I have no discomfort what we're doing right now, but then again, a proposal is made. I have been through the process. It is an uncomfortable process, but if we want to do this in an open manner such that the public is have the ability to see our considerations, then here we go. No, that was a
forgotten. Loris made the motion. It was really concise. It was that we move to... You got it? Okay. All right, further discussion. Morris, anything else?
None.
Olson?
Aye.
Cheney?
Aye.
Sanders? No. It passes. We will start conducting. So that changes Veterans Affairs. It changes every appointment from this point forward. Public forum number two is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. The board may not take any action due to the requirements of the meeting law, but we may do so in the future. Anybody wishing to address us on any topic? Seeing no one moving immediately, microphone, liaison assignments, committee meeting updates. Marty, I'll start with you.
We have an AEDC meeting here on Wednesday with the Lieutenant Governor. We have a regional guidance, our governance board with mental health here Thursday. Going to Central Iowa Juvenile Justice, Eldora on Friday, and I have been asked to join the Story County, the Ames and Story County Boys and Girls Board.
Outstanding. Congratulations. Lawrence.
I'm not going to go to the governor, so there will be at least one supervisor around for the all-day training exercise, which is Wednesday. That's Wednesday, tomorrow, and then the lieutenant governor is tomorrow. So I had originally signed up for it, but okay, not going. I've got HRDA down in Des Moines and Community and Family Resources up in Webster City, both on the same day. In between here, I might stop at the office, but we're working on some transportation information. I think we've actually located the study that was done in the 1990s, which, believe me, is actually exciting. Okay? And with that, I'll pass.
Outstanding. Nothing from me. A motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. That was fun.